Welcome to Between Two Flags. It is July 17th or 18th, depending on where in the world you are. I see we've got some people in the backstage already, but I am going to obviously bring up my co-host. Hi, Jason. There we go. How are you doing?
Good morning into your evening. Good morning, good morning. I'm Jason, the host of State of the Nation, coming out to you from Vietnam. Of all places.
Good morning, Vietnam.
Good morning, Vietnam. That's how we roll.
We should start incorporating that into our show, unless there's like some copyright issue. But it's nice to see you again.
Thank you very much. I do actually incorporate that into my classes sometimes. The kids love shouting it out. I get a whole bunch of 8-year-olds screaming, "Good morning, Vietnam!"
Good morning, Vietnam! Oh, classic. We should all rewatch that. Honestly, that's when times were simpler, weren't they?
Yeah, when they made real movies that were not woke.
When they made real movies that entertained us and didn't make our heads melt and our IQs levels go down.
That's right. Who are we talking to today?
We are talking Granny Margaret Mackay is back. And we have a special guest from New Zealand that we've never. Of course. So, and we've switched on. So look at us trading spaces. Okay, so I am going to bring up Granny.
She's jumped location. I was just about to hit the trigger with Vinny, so I'll bring him up as well.
Yeah, let's bring everybody up.
Yep. But Billy's still on the road, I guess. Still on his way.
I'm not sure he's going to be turning up tonight, actually. He's had to cancel. He's had some kind of issue turn up. He wasn't specific about what it was. But it is his birthday today. So, Billy, if you're watching this later, I'd like to sing you happy birthday. I hope it was the best day of your life for another year. I hope you will remember the days when you were young and free and nothing stood in your way. Hey!
Beautiful. Happy birthday, Vinny. Happy birthday, Billy. Billy. So he's not going to be able to make it, but that's okay. He's been on quite a few times. You're the official guest today, Vinny, because we've never, ever had you on the show before.
Right. Special light retarded. In the constrained by the state sense of the word.
Quality special. Now, for background context, Vinny, you're one of the New Zealand OGs. You're one of the original gangsters when it comes to raising the bullhorn and getting people out there in the street. You've been at it since the very early 2000s, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right. In Italian, I would be known as an oregano gangster. But the fact of the matter is there's nobody else who... you remember back in 2008 when Alex Jones was basically all there was online, you know, the InfoWars and the live streaming and all of that kind of thing. So I was sitting here in New Zealand and listening to all the things that he was saying. And then when I went out and started interviewing all the activists, all the people at the protests with the megaphones and microphones, we were giving speeches and things of that nature. And instead of giving them 5 minutes or 30 seconds like the media would, I gave them an hour or two. And the geometric amount of information that started to really pour onto my channel got me as the first New Zealander on American Talk Radio, and still the only New Zealander to be on American Talk Radio, currently on Republic Broadcasting Network. So during that time, I'd probably published about 6,500 videos, ranging in length from just a few minutes to up to 6 hours. And this was with thousands of individuals around the world about hundreds of different issues. And the whole idea behind that was that you would be able to watch the show, and for everybody who was watching it, there'd be one person who would hear just a little bit of a different story about how somebody woke up or how they started doing what they're doing or what they did to improve their health. And during any one show, there might be one person who improves their life just that little bit. And that's why you do it. And I got deplatformed and demonetized by Patreon, YouTube, and Twitter, respectively, in 2021. And ever since then, it's been a real struggle to get, let alone anybody else's voice heard, my own voice heard. And we got arrested for protesting lockdowns in 2021. And we were put in jail for, I think, 28 hours and let out with bail conditions that we'd never heard of before, like banned from the internet, as in you couldn't even check your internet banking, banned from having a mobile phone, banned from having any contact with each other, which was very difficult because we worked together on a regular basis with activism and stuff here in New Zealand. We were numero uno and numero dos, Billy and I. During the election, he was the third most preferred prime minister and had a donors list of 70,000 people, and yet they somehow only got 20,000 votes during the election after enormous demonization campaigns by the media and actually censoring the party's official Facebook page 3 weeks until election day. This was a massive thing that Billy tested about whether or not it is possible to mount a political action against tyranny in New Zealand. And we found out that, unfortunately, it was not possible because of the countermeasures that the state is capable of deploying to derail any movement that might threaten them. So we proved that, and now we've proved that if you go out and you protest against these tyrannical measures, you will get moved on by police. The people in Wellington, those hundreds and thousands of people who got moved on by police in riot gear armed with pepper spray and rubber bullets and sound weapons and EMF weapons that made people sick for weeks. We've seen the true dark nature of New Zealand firsthand. We all have. And it only seems to be getting worse. And right now, myself and Billy TK are facing 3 months, myself, and 4 months in the New Zealand prison because we peacefully protested with less than 100 people outside Television New Zealand on the first day of lockdown in 2021. This is nearly two whole years ago that we've been dealing with these kind of conditions and court costs and things of that nature. It's been very hard on our families. It's bankrupted us financially. And also because of being banned from the internet, it's very difficult for us to get an audience anymore because a whole bunch of other outlets started to open during those lockdowns and are still very much going strong today. So the New Zealand public has umpteen alternative media now today, whereas 15 years ago when I started, I was it for a period of nearly 10 years.
That's right, that's right, yeah. Now, like we always say on when we do our interviews, we talk about the Illuminati and stuff like that. And like back in the days, back in 2013, when I interviewed Benjamin Fulford about his struggle with White Dragon Society, right? Back then, we were kind of basically lunatics on the fringe who and nobody knew anything about it. But now, like, you can go onto YouTube and you can watch explainer videos about it, you know, and there are these young kids who've gone up and built the channel, and they're getting, like, literally, like, millions of views and just explaining the stuff to people. So, it's really overwhelming now, but a lot of the original guys have just been wiped off the face of the earth, you know, when it comes to getting their global reach on social media with YouTube. And you had thousands and thousands of videos which was taken away when they deplatformed you and cut you out off YouTube.
And that wasn't the hardest part about that, is losing, you know, my life's work per se. It was the fact that there were a lot of people on those videos that aren't alive anymore. So you can't go out and re-interview them sort of thing. And a lot of those things are lost. We probably lost about 80% of the content in total. And because of its loss from the platforms where people are searching for them, like YouTube, the bulk of those things that are left have roughly zero views. And so, there's a big memory hole operation going on right here, a la 1984, whereby the things that are inconvenient for the current status quo and ruling class will simply be destroyed so that people will forget that they even existed in the first place.
So I'm doing something right here. Sorry, I want to introduce Vinny. I would like you to meet Granny Margaret
McKay.
Yeah, I
just want to do that. Yes, I just want to segue into that.
Granny Margaret McKay, she lives in Western Alberta, or in Alberta, same province that I live in. Granny Margaret is the biggest advocate. There are four men that were at the Coots blockade while the rest of the truckers went to Ottawa. There was a blockade in southern Alberta at the Coots border right against the U.S. And Brenda Margaret McKay, she is the biggest advocate and the biggest voice, and she brings hope and she raises awareness that these men have been in remand for, was it 515 days now, with no bail hearing or anything like that. So, Granny Margaret, you go ahead. Because I know you're only here for a few moments. You have to get going.
Yes, I'm at the other end of, can you hear me okay, or is my phone staticky?
It's staticky.
Okay, well, I just wanted to come on and say hello, and I'm going to share the story with the four men that are in the remand jail waiting a trial for May, June of 2024. That will be close to 2.5 years they will be in the remand jail awaiting a speedy trial. Yeah, so I just wanted to wish you the best. I'll tell your story to the four men over here, and maybe I could share better. My connection's so bad, I can tell it's horrible. So, but it's this grandma's bad time. Okay, well, I'll be back again, and good night. Love you all, and we'll be thinking of you in New Zealand. I wish you the best. Well, that's the truth, and if we don't stand up and push back, and I mean push back peacefully, I'm not into any form of violence, but we do deserve our rights and freedoms to be honored, and if they can do that, this to these four men, they can do it to anyone, and that's what everybody needs to realize. No one's safe as long as these men are in the remands, so... well, right now we are trying to help them financially. The lawyer bills are expensive, and we also have a letter campaign to help the men. Their mental health is important. 518 days in a remand jail. You don't have a lot to do. It's not a facility where you've got things you can do. There's a lot of time on your hands. You can pray July 25th is a big day in these men's lives. Pray that maybe something will happen and they'll be released. If not, it'll be going to trial in May, June of 2024.
I think you should start calling me Granny soon.
Next time we'll sound better, but I'm going to say goodnight. I'm going to say love you all, and you can share the rest. You know the story pretty good, Judy, so you can share the details, okay? Okay, good night, everyone. Ciao.
Thank you, Brenda McKay. See you again real soon.
Okay, thank you. Good night.
Wow, that was really transformative. Like.
I like it.
All right, we're down to three. All right, that's good. So I can go to this little three-man picture here. There we are. I like this one. This is my favorite. Right, that's the three lineup. So Rosie, explain in more detail what happened in Coot. You had a brother there.
Yes, and it was January, February of last year when the main convoy went to Ottawa. There was a bunch of people from Western Canada, especially in the Alberta area. They went down to the American border. That's where the town of Coots is.
and they set up a blockade there. And it's like one of the main places where transport trucks go through, going between the U.S. and Canada. So they set up a blockade there, but they didn't block everything. There was always one lane available, and it was the same thing, peaceful protest, thing that was happening in Ottawa, of course, less partying at night. But there were food tents set up, there were a lot of donations coming in, so much support. And right near the end of it, there was a truck full of weapons that suddenly showed up, and these four men, they were charged with conspiracy to murder police officers. And they barely knew each other. They all showed up. They were there for the blockade for, like, most of it. They showed up on the first days, and then the media kind of spun it, saying that they were like a little group kind of on the outside that were, you know. And so they had no idea. They weren't even told that they were being charged with at first. The one guy, Gary, his wife, I think it was Gary, his wife was arrested as well. She was released, I think, after 24 hours or so. But, Granny Margaret, she just, corrected me. 518 days that they've been in jail on charges of conspiracy to murder police officers. And they just won't let it go to court. They're just pushing it back and pushing it back. And so we're trying to raise awareness of the political prisoners here in Canada. And we've got bumper stickers and t-shirts. And July 26th is the next time that they'll all be in court. It's in Lethbridge, Alberta. It's in southern Alberta, just a few hours from where the Coots blockade was. And we're just trying to show our support and raise awareness. So we're trying to see that actually just, two days ago? No, it was yesterday. Yesterday when I was in Lethbridge, there was a guy with a bumper sticker, and I just started chatting with him, and he gave me another bumper sticker, so I've got a couple now. But so Granny Margaret, she has a Facebook page, Alberta Political Prisoners, and she's just constantly updating on how things are going with the guys, posting encouraging things. People are, like, there's a person making keychains to, like, help donate that money towards. They're doing, like, raffles. There's artwork. There's a whole bunch of things that people are doing to try to raise the funds because, the lawyer fees are starting to get really expensive. And it's just a trial by punishment or a punishment by trial. Like, they're just dragging it out. And it's, like, the one guy, he's a celiac, and they refuse to give him, like, gluten-free food. So he's just constantly suffering. And, 518 days now with no bail.
Oh, my goodness. The police also didn't want to give us bail. They, quote, strongly opposed bail. And the judge in our case, Judge Peter Winter, said you can either oppose bail or not oppose bail. It doesn't matter how strongly you feel about it to the prosecuting officer. And we did get out on bail the first day, but of course those bail conditions, house arrest and bail checks. So we had knock on the door, 4 o'clock in the morning, flashlight shining, and they go, oh, you're home, okay, and then they're off, that kind of thing. It was very distressing kind of thing, especially for me with complex post-traumatic stress. I remember coming back, the next morning and making coffee for my wife. And I'm just sitting there, just crying at the sink, kind of thing. And my wife, Sarah, she's my ex-wife now, she calls out and she goes, oh, baby, are you crying while you're making me coffee? And I go, the granules are so beautiful. And I had to really craft a lot of humor and stuff like that to go through the real trauma and sort of the shock of the arrest and realizing that you could be going to jail for up to 6 months sort of thing. And that was over 2 years ago. And still, it doesn't leave you, shock and distress like that. Not easily, I don't think. And so it's been hard to really continue working and doing the right thing and speaking out for the voiceless and things of that nature, because I've got so many of my own problems that I'm dealing with. But now I'm loading them all on you, so a load a load halved is a load shed, you know.
So, you know, we got big shoulders. So do you want to explain your background? Because, yeah, people watching can kind of, this is the photo, your backdrop is a photo of your arrest.
Yeah. There's me in the middle that I'm standing in front of. So if I go down here, you can see there I am with my entourage. And that was the day. So we had, about 80 people there, and we were live streaming it on Twitch. And the cops came up and warned Billy, and he wouldn't stand under their authority, and so they arrested him. And then they came up and they semi-warned me, and I was kind of like freaked out at that point because I just seen Billy get arrested. And then they charge us with a what they call penetrating formations, because I had a bunch of people crowded around me. And so they came in their formation and they tore through the crowd like cotton candy, and then got me and ripped my megaphone off and broke its mount and ripped my microphone off of my head as well, snapped that in half, and then marched us into the paddy wagon. And I'm 6'6" and I suffer from claustrophobia. And so when they put me in this tiny little confined space, I started basically having a panic attack. And they still had my hands cuffed behind me as well. And so during the duration of there, I think we were taken to Mount Eden prison. We weren't taken to the police station. We were taken to prison immediately. And we were put in solitary confinement for 28 hours. And then we were kind of consulted by the lawyers on the other side of the line, because they'd confiscated our phones. And they also charged us under the Search and Surveillance Act with refusing to give them our phone's passwords while we were in custody without a lawyer. And so that was up to 3 months in prison that we're going to be charged for with that. And it was a constable, Derek Chung, I believe. And that charge got withdrawn. And now we are just facing the appeal of our sentence. We've already been convicted, we've already been sentenced, and now this is the last step, the appeal, because if I go to jail for 3 months, I've got a, on the day of the court date, my son will be just turning 6 months old. And so that's going to cause incredible hardship, you know, not only on me from being separated from them and stuff like that, you know, when you've got a young baby, you love them so freaking much. And that's going to be really difficult, but also really hard on Rebecca, my partner, who's, you know, freaking out about it kind of to a large degree. And so she should, because this is such a distressing situation for anybody to really be faced with. And it's all in the name of standing up and speaking the truth when the government has passed a law that makes it illegal to stand up and speak the truth. And that's what's really on the line here. And that's why it's such an important landmark case, because the literal Bill of Rights, what we call the BOA, has enshrined within it the right to freedom of assembly, the right to freedom of speech, and various other rights. Unfortunately, it also has a clause that says you have these rights unless we say you don't. And when they passed the law enacting the lockdowns and things of that nature, they passed it at 4 o'clock in the morning when almost nobody was around to contest it. And it gave police untold powers, the ability to enter your home and without warrants and things of that nature. So there's a large, shall we say, backing by tyrannical power behind a lot of these measures that we've seen in many of our nations. And it means that basically worldwide, being a human and having human rights is starting to become a thing of the past. They're trying to literally wipe us out by hook or by crook. and this thing has affected the music industry as well. A number of musicians I've interviewed, the lead singer of UB40, who got fired via text message after 14 years singing for the band because he wouldn't take the thing. And then the band, on their first gig, with everybody with their passes and stuff like that allowed to come in, there was a big disaster that happened in the area, and they had to cancel everything and refund all their money. Dodge that bullet, right? Karma comes at you from sideways direction sometimes, doesn't it? And, you know, with the people who are poo-pooing people like me and want me to go to jail, who all took the things, I'm just like, okay, I've got two options for you. There's pericarditis for you and myocarditis for you. Enjoy. Okay? I didn't make that choice for you. You made your choice. You made your bed. Now you need to lie in it. And ultimately, this is some of the worst time in history to be suffering at the hands of fraud, I think. Because if people lie to you and you do it, and then it hurts you, that's fraudulent behavior, wouldn't you think? And because it's happened on such a grand scale internationally, one country, one man cannot fight it. And thus, we're all drawn into this fight together, like a family facing a home invader.
Yeah. Well, that's what the Canadian government has started. That's their narrative now. Well, we never forced you to do it. We never forced anybody to do it. And yet, like, you just, like, there's so many videos. You just watch the videos from, like, Jerry, and it's like, you know, don't expect you'll be able to get on a train or plane next to, you know, the ones that are, you know, don't think that you'll keep your job if you blah, 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 blah. And now it's like, we never said it. You have. And it's like, oh, my goodness. Oh, no. You know.
It's when you're being gaslit, it makes you go nuts, doesn't it?
Yep.
Gets you so furious that people can't see that the sky is blue. They can't see that it's full of chemtrails either.
they are.
They just don't see, and it's because they don't want to look. And I didn't want to look, but I did, because I got curious after seeing a lot of bad stuff in my own life. You start wondering what the hell the point of it is, and start to discover that there's a lot worse things going on in this world than what you got going on in your life. And the terrible things that are going on in this world are actually, in many cases, the cause of the terrible things that you're going through in your life. Isn't that interesting? Like, if you find out that public schooling is actually a cult indoctrination process, right? Think about it. You've got poor nutrition at the school cafeteria. You've got sleep deprivation because all the kids have to get up early to go to school before mum and dad even get to go to work. And all of these elements of repetition, even the kind of lighting that they have in the classrooms, that fluorescent lighting that's not too bright and not too dark so it kind of makes you a bit sleepy, right? All of these things have resulted in an indoctrinated population that is all key to authority. They love it, they cherish it, they worship it, and they will be very angry at anybody who has a negative opinion of it.
Yeah, and heaven forbid that you start to argue with the cult leaders.
Try arguing.
Don't argue with the cult leaders. No, no, don't do that. You'll upset them, and they might come around and see your house at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, just have another sip of cooler, you guys. You know, everything will be all right. You will owe nothing until you be happy.
Precisely. Rosie, there's something wrong with your microphone. Is this normal?
No, it's because I think I'm thinking from the technical side of it, you're actually geared up for a syndicate, and she never uses a pair of headphones, so.
Oh, really?
I think we're getting her reverb, yeah.
Well, if so, you just you know turn what, your, we've had this in the past. If you simply turn your speakers down a little bit to about half volume, so that you can still hear us, but it eliminates the reverb, because generally the microphones are up high and the speakers are down low, so that if those, oh, that's beautiful.
Okay.
Perfect.
I'll just strain to hear you guys.
Perfect. You can hear me though?
I can still hear you. Yeah.
Oh my goodness! We just solved it, folks. See.
Okay, and then we'll know for next time.
Mm-hmm.
Almost it. A little, just a tiny little bit. Weaver, what would be some, you know, icing on the cake? Because I can get it as well.
Yeah. Oh man, it's just that. What was it? Justin, the man behind Counterspin in New Zealand, who are also up on charges for exposing the Christchurch Mosque Massacre down here, is a bit of a FF, you know what I'm saying, they shared a link to an offshore thing, and they've been doing brilliant work, mostly with the help of Justin, who has been a stalwart in the industry of film production and big gigs in Hong Kong for many, many years as a Kiwi, and he comes back, and the only gig he could get was with an alternative media outlet, you know, and he helped them do so well. And he said to me, Vinny, the show is about the sound. You can get along without having the visual there if there's some kind of balls up, but if there's a problem with the sound, you've got no show.
See, the problem now is I can't hear Jason because I could barely hear him before because of the echo.
Took the volume up just a tad more. It shouldn't distort it too bad unless it's up at full volume, I think.
Still good?
Yeah.
Still good?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So 3/4.
I'm in the middle of the road. I'm kind of in the middle of the road because I went to film and television school, so I by default I wear headphones.
Yeah.
Vinny. Just so you know, the very first show that we did, Between Two Flags, was the same day that Ardern resigned. And we were having technical difficulties like crazy. So anytime we have technical difficulties, we always blame Ardern and Trudeau. Because, you know, why not?
Jacinda Trudern.
Yeah, Jacinda Trudern.
You got to totally blame the Christchurch call for this. All right. So... Oh, man.
I actually saw that video, Vinny. I was in China at the time teaching English, and I saw that video, that mosque video, because it was on some Gore website, and somebody had uploaded it there, and I saw the whole thing. And you know, that thing was completely choreographed, completely orchestrated. That the actual guy who had the body cam, he literally almost, he didn't know what he was doing. He was just being told to just go there, do this, do that, do this. And I'm sure he actually was actually behind the real person who was actually doing it. But I think as he walked in and he turned into the big hall, there was a guy jumping out the window. That, and I reckon that was the guy, because a lot of that was already done before the guy was already there. Because he had walked in and they were all in a pile in the corner, and he hadn't been into the room before.
Yeah, and so many anomalies and so many red flags. I believe on the day I called up 3 people. One of them was an expert in predicting false flags, Ole Damegaard, who'd been doing it for 40 years. And when he came on the day one, our live stream got interrupted. We were banned in the middle of a live stream. Never happened to me before, never happened to him in 40 years. And the next day on, we had, what was his name? He was on the plane with the underwear bomber in the United States one time, Kurt Richard Haskell. And he is famous for creating the false flag signs, all right? So 40 different signs that something is a false flag. Okay, so I immediately went to him, got him on the interview, and then we went through all the coverage that we'd had at that point. This is only 2 days after the attack. Out of a possible 40 signs that it's a false flag, by day two, we'd identified 28. Now, this is things that will never happen in a genuine attack. 28 things that will never happen in a genuine attack we'd already identified by day two of investigation, when everything's fresh. I think it was by day six or seven of investigation, we had 37 out of a possible 40. And so the overwhelming evidence to us was that you can't really talk about this kind of thing, and you can't really show the footage and stuff like that, because you'll go to jail. We had people who had guns pointed at them and at their children because they shared the link online, right? And went to jail for 10 years as a result of sharing a link. And so currently, Counterspin Media, who've been going ever since I was arrested, and just a little bit before then on Anzac Day, this is the Australian New Zealand Army Corps commemoration, they have been arrested. They've had all of their equipment taken. They've had, I think, over 1,000 terabytes, you know, like of footage confiscated, and they have to go into the police to go through it and all of this kind of stuff. And they're facing 14 years, that's Hannah Sperra, and 28 years, her partner Calvin. And they are currently just new parents together, their little baby Storm. And so, yeah, man, this this country's coming down hard down on everybody. We also had Liz Gunn, famous for Free NZ, and she got on, I think, David Icke or Alex Jones or something like that during the Baby Will scandal, where they were giving jabbed blood to a baby that needed unjabbed blood. And this kind of thing, she was at a airport filming some people arriving, and they were assaulted by the airport staff and the police. I think he nearly broke her thumb off, you know, and smashed her cameraman, my mate Jono's camera, with $15,000. And now they're being charged with assaulting a police officer. And we had, much before this, Lee Williams, who was speaking out against the extreme Māori radicals in New Zealand, who are using tribal law and all of this kind of stuff to take control of the country. And he got debanked. The Westpac Bank actually cancelled his bank accounts. And he got fired from his job because his employers were contacted by all these radicals saying you can't employ a white supremacist, you know. And this is just like what's happening in New Zealand. We even had Brad Flutie, who's a protester up north at the last refinery that we have working here in New Zealand, our only oil independence, just being shut down. And they had an encampment up there. And then he winds up getting arrested for not wearing a mask in a bottle store, where he'd already talked with the manager, who said, it's okay if you don't wear a mask, right? And he's facing like five charges of assaulting police officers and all sorts of stuff, because he didn't go willingly. And now he's facing prison as well. And on top of that, I think this Saturday, 6 p.m. New Zealand Standard Time, we're going to be having Vinny's Last Hurrah at Shane LaRose's bar on at 33 New North Road in Kingsland. And Shane himself has been raided by the police a number of times since the lockdowns and things of that nature, because of the freedom stance that he's taken. He's now being involved in politics. And interestingly enough, out of well over 100 events that he had, the police raids only happened when he was having freedom parties. Three times the police came in, they took the donations bucket. They took all the liquor and everything like that that they found everywhere. And this happened three times. And now they're charging him in court as well. So in New Zealand, if you're speaking, standing for freedom, you have a long and painful road ahead of you. And I think this is sending a chilling effect, which could be deadly if metastasized.
Yeah, I already call it a captured state because I lived in China for 7 years. I'm living in Vietnam for 7 years. They're both communist countries. I can recognize the sign. It's very clear that New Zealand is a communist country now under this current regime. And by the looks of what's going on with the Greens and all that, they've got the LGBTQ back as well. So they got that corner stacked up. It's crossed over. So people are saying, well, it's already happened. It happened while you were sleeping, while they were sleeping.
Here in Canada,
and
too.
And they came out too late. And sorry, go ahead, Rosie.
Yeah, I was just sitting here in Canada, too. You know, there's just all the, like, even now the censorship bills that have been passed. Nobody wanted them, and they were just kind of snuck through in the middle of the night. And now it's getting harder. It's almost impossible for any kind of independent media or anyone with the YouTube channel. It's just, you know, the algorithm just swallows it up. Unless, like, in the first couple of minutes, you get a bunch of likes and people share it out, it'll disappear. So, like, my little channel, I've only got, like, 400 and some subscribers, I think 457 now. But, I've had the channel for a year now. And that's just the way it goes. But, it's getting harder to get the word out. The censorship around here is real. And then I'm hearing about it all happening. You know, all the Commonwealth countries, we're all facing the same kind of thing. That's the whole point of the show, Between Two Flags, is to point out our similarities so that we don't feel so alone and to kind of just let everybody know kind of what's going on. Because that's what I noticed during the protest in Ottawa, the trucker convoy, and then the occupation in Wellington in New Zealand, is it was like a couple of days apart, but it was the exact same playbook. And it just like boggled my mind because I was watching all the live feeds from New Zealand. I was watching all the live feeds from Ottawa, and it was just a couple of days delayed because the truckers got there first, and then you guys got to Wellington. But it was the exact same thing. The politicians wouldn't come down and talk to you guys. You know, the way the cops treated you, and, you know, it was just all the same. It blew my mind a little bit, but I was freshly woken up at the time, and it was a lot to take in. Last year was pretty heavy.
Yeah, heavy times.
I tell you what though, sorry about that, Vinny. I tell you what, you know, like China and Vietnam, although they're both communist countries, Vietnam really can't stand China, to be honest. Like over here, they support, like down here in the south, they support Republicans. Yeah, there's definitely still a north and a south, North Vietnamese, which are mostly predominated by China because it's near the border. And then you've got, and because this area was not a traditional part of Vietnam, it was brought into the fix, you know, a couple of hundred years ago. So traditionally, Vietnam was just a northern area, and then it became, it absorbed the south into it. It was a completely different region down here before. But like, they're actually making energy companies accountable for making sure there's plenty of electricity, there's plenty of petrol, and the prices aren't high, making sure that there's no inflation. They've basically given up on the whole COVID thing. They were really, you know, adamant at it in the beginning, but they learned very quickly. They were the first to lock down and the very first to open up. And around here, people are quite aware, and there's none of this woke stuff going on at schools. You won't get any of this LGBTQ stuff. They just won't stand for it. So it's interesting that they're both communist countries, but they're both very, very different in the way they operate. There are no restrictions here. They don't restrict the internet. You know, Facebook and the way it's free. So it's really interesting how it is. It just seems to me that Vietnam is like just on the surface. It just is what it is because it's easier, because they don't need to change anymore. Like they do go to WEF meetings, but they shake hands and they smile but when they get back here, they've completely forgotten about what they were talking about. You know, they're not implementing these things. So Cambodia and Vietnam seem to be a stronghold for a logical free area. China being tied up with Russia and all that, there, you know, there's a reason for what they're doing up there. But you know, even though I lived in China and I've got lots of Chinese friends, I spent 7 years teaching there and I love the country, but the whole social credit system for me, it's just it's the thing that I can't gel with. I like China. I don't mind communism. We used to call it capitalism. You know, we used to say great party, but where's communism? You know, that's what we used to say in China, because they're extremely capitalist when they were tied up with Clinton and Obama back in that era, which caused all of this stuff anyway. That was the cause of all this carry on, all that. So it's really interesting how we seem to be like. I seem to be like the odd one out, that I can see what's going on in New Zealand and I can see what's going on in Canada, but here it's still like normal. But I can see that it's become so extreme in both Canada and New Zealand and Australia that it's just like hard. It's hard to fathom sometimes, really.
Yeah, that's the communist strategy, is to normalize things, you know, and. I think it was Yuri Bezmenov, he was talking about how they would indoctrinate three generations of children to demoralize the country, that they would destroy religion and they would create a more malleable mind that was easy to manipulate and easier to control. And the other side of that coin is precisely the infiltration of Canada, which was exposed by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police in the late 90s, where they investigated into communist infiltration and Chinese influence in Canada. And they dug up some interesting things, like the Chinese owned 80% of downtown Vancouver, and the Chinese triads had a presence in 100% of Canada's ports. And
now we actually have Chinese police headquarters that are there to keep the Chinese, their own people, in check. And there was a story that broke a little while ago where they were threatening Chinese politicians too. And then of course there was a big scandal where Beijing had donated, I forget how many, tens of thousands of dollars to the Trudeau Foundation, and then of course the Liberal Party is like, oh no, we'll give all that money back. But it's like, okay, well, you've robbed the bank and now you're just going to return the money and everything's forgotten, you know. It's and of course now the mayor of Toronto, she's kind of playing ignorant too. She says she had no idea that Beijing was donating to her campaign. Surprise.
Yes. You're muted there, Jason. There you go. Oh, now you muted yourself again.
Yeah, press once, not twice.
Yeah, Canada is like the go-to place for Chinese. You know, I got a friend of mine, my best Chinese friend, like he's a real dude. His English name is Summersby. And he walks around and he wears like three-piece suits and all that. And he's a real dude. He's a little man bag. And he's got a perfect British accent, Summersby, right? You know, and he walks around, and his family, he's got a brother who's working, you know, and living in Canada, and they got citizenship there, and that's the go-to place. It's not, people think like they go to America, but most of them want to go to Canada. For some reason, they're not really into the American style. They're more into going to Canada. I think it's because of the size. And because it was rural, and Canadians are just, in general, it's a lot more sensible than, sorry to all my American friends, but they're just a lot more sensible and a bit more conservative, and you know.
Well, and
when they drive a lot of trucks around and block off and blockade borders, then I'm really into them.
Well, I mean, that's all well and good, but I think the main reason why they find it so comfortable in Canada is because embassies have been giving out fake passports, so that a lot of these purchases of Canadian businesses and properties and things of that nature are being logged as being purchased by citizens. And the People's Liberation Army, the Chinese CIA, and the Triads, the largest organized crime syndicate in the world, did a deal. And they said that they're going to send people over to Canada and New Zealand and Australia and any other country that they can really get their hands on with these fake passports. They're going to buy up the local businesses, keep running the business as per usual, don't do anything, you know, fancy or change it. Raise your kids, make sure they study really hard, make sure they get into university, make sure they study really hard at university, and then make sure that once they graduate, they get a job at the government. Couple of generations later, today, you're talking about a Royal Canadian Mounted Police investigation that can be shut down at the highest levels as early as 1998. That means that in 1998, the Chinese already owned the Prime Minister's Office of Canada. We are living in the wasteland of communist infiltration.
I saw a really funny meme today. Two people sitting on a bench, and the lady says to the guy, she's like, what Chinese products can you live without? And the guy replies, Trudeau.
Brilliant. That's brilliant.
Oh, man.
It's a sad truth, though. It's a very sad truth, because the Chinese have actually been around from very early 1600s and all that. But before they became, you know, like, they basically built the railroad systems in North America, technically speaking. So they've been in the system for quite a long time. It's just this brand of China, I don't know how much longer it can maintain itself. This communist China, I don't know how long it can sustain itself, because I've been chatting with my friends there, and like usually the companies would get like two or three orders a week. Like, this is just making pot lids, you know, glass pot lids, tempered glass pot lids. They'd get two or three orders a week, one order in 3 months, you know, and like industries are fast closing down because of the knock-on effect from the COVID lockdown. And the coup that was taking place in China at the time, and that was the reason for the lockdown, was the coup. There was a coup against. There were two factions of the CCP going after each other, and so they used COVID as a cover to fight it out, to duke it out, and guess who won? We can see who won. She won. So she won against the other tribe. So, but the problem is what it's done to the market, to the economy, and the lockouts and their experience. I don't think China anticipated that would happen. To be honest, I don't think they did it. So now, Shanghai businesses, Shanghai and Shenzhen, like two of the major hubs, people are just moving out. Corporations are fast moving away, and they're moving here, actually. They're moving to Vietnam, most of them.
Yeah, it's like Pepsi Light, you know, communism light, sort of like a diet communism, sort of like I can't believe it's not communism.
That's funny. Yeah, it's quite the entertainment. I live in the countryside here. I live way up the country. So I for a couple of years I was in Ho Chi Minh. I was right down there. Actually, your mate Wiz, Woody, your mate, he's in Hanoi, right? So we have a chat about that sometimes, but I'm way out here in the country near the tunnel, and I'm right by the Cambodian border. So when the whole lockdown thing started, the first thing I did was move to the beach. That was the first thing I did. So I hung out on the beach for the first round. And then when things started to settle down, I moved to the countryside, close to the border, just in case anything went down, I could bail. Just dash across that border, because it's a sort of landlocked area. There's no ocean around that border, so and it's mountains and trees and all that kind of thing. You just walk through. If anything really, really goes down, then I can just walk across the border. There's no problem. You know, but yeah. But it seems to be sane here. That's the problem. It seems to be sane. People here, I talked to the local people, and they said they're not going to get enough jabs because, you know, a teacher, a Vietnamese teacher, her hair started falling in. The other teacher, he got like sort of arm paralysis his arm was paralyzed for like 3 days. And when I asked him, would you take another one? No, wouldn't take another one. It's not worth it. And so now people are already sort of heckling the government about vaccines. You know, they tried it. And you know, people didn't even protest. what they did is they just stormed the barrier, like, because Ho Chi Minh was locked down and people weren't actually allowed out. They weren't allowed out of the city. And you get a lot of transitory migrant workers who come into the city and they want to go home. So they didn't hang around. They just built up a really big crowd and just stormed the barriers, and the government just went, oh, let them go. Nothing to do about it. Yeah.
Wish we I wish we had that kind of support here in New Zealand. You know, it was because being arrested in lockdown, you know, that kind of stuff. So anybody who wanted to come and see you or anything like that had to violate lockdown, and we had no takers. You know, so you know, because if you violate lockdown, you can go to prison for up to 6 months. You know, that was the law here, and it still is today. If they call another one, and and maybe they might not need to. Dingle.com, Jonathan Eisen from Uncensored Magazine was telling me this. This is the number one kind of very official population projection specialist company, a big company. And they've predicted that the population of the United States by 2025 will drop from about 330 million, which it is now, to about 100 million. So they're predicting that nearly two-thirds or more than two-thirds of the population is going to die within the next 2 years. So all these people walking around thinking they're switched on because they don't want to have another one, they might not be around to even make that choice. And so we've got basically a scramble type of scenario right now where the window is closing, where you've got enough people who are pissed off and might be able to do something about it, and their ticking time bomb of spike proteins.
Yeah, that's right. The Deagle, they've gone ahead and edited that website because they actually showed the death rate. Now they've gone and manipulated it a little bit. They've actually taken the actual numbers away. But yeah, it was down from about 330 down to about 100 million. So that's 230 million lost. New Zealand was expected to lose well over a million or so. New Zealand was a million or so. England, I think it was something like, how many people in England now?
40 million, I think.
Anybody?
We've got 40 million now.
Okay, so New Zealand, England was going to lose anywhere between 15 to 20 million, something like that. But half or a little bit more of all these countries. And these are the same countries that are having all these problems. The Vietnamese population was going to rise. Philippine population was going to rise. The Chinese population was going to rise. The Indian population was going to rise. So these countries are not dealing with these issues. They got caught up with it in the beginning. They got sucked into the trap. But now they've figured it out that the whole thing was a scam. Right? But of course, being in any government situation, you can't admit, oh, we were wrong, because that would lose confidence. So what their technique is, their strategy is just like, okay, we'll play a couple of commercials on it and slowly just let it just slip away. You know, instead of having to apologize that we got it wrong, let's just forget about it, you know?
Forget about it.
Yeah, let's just forget about it and just carry on the way we were, you know, building the economy and all that. And so on. But yeah, the whole issue with the spike protein. But the problem with that is that there were so many different batches with so many different ingredients that not everybody got the same thing. So I think there was a study done and they determined some of the lethality. It was like probably like one in every five or one in every six was not a placebo, right? A majority of them were placebos. And then it was like 0.03 were lethal. And then something like 2% were actually semi-lethal or damaging. And then probably, I don't know how many percent, it's been a while since I saw the study, but a large majority got placebo. So, but they all definitely got some kind of a tracking system inside. Sure.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of banking on the placebo thing because, I ended up with getting two doses of the Pfizer one before I... So... But I've been feeling good.
Well, hopefully,
feeling great, actually.
Hopefully you feel continue to feel good and something doesn't just pop out at you, because so many people took them not knowing what they were doing and have woken up since, and so many people took them knowing that they were bad and have been suffering ever since, this kind of guilt, regret type thing. And so it's caused this massive rift in humanity, basically, where it's affected our ability to communicate and feel each other's pain and that kind of thing, because it was just launched on us all of a sudden, and we all just had to react, and we didn't have the time or the resources to act the way we wanted a lot of the time. We were coerced.
Well, we weren't allowed to, because we were isolated. We had to stay at home, and we were told, and don't hug your loved ones, and don't go visit your family members that are in the hospital, and, you know, don't, I mean, I fed into it so much. I made sure I followed the arrows up and down the grocery store aisles in the right direction. I was just the perfect little sheep, and thank God for the truckers. Thank God for the Canadian trucker convoy. Because it was the lies that the media was telling wasn't jiving with what I was watching live. Because my dad was a trucker. I've got family, my brothers and, you know, cousins, sisters-in-law, a lot of people that have been, you know, truckers. And they were all hailed as heroes until right at the end, when it was suddenly like, no, now you guys have to be vaccinated. And 80% of them were. So now suddenly all these new rules, and thank God it happened, because I couldn't even imagine where I probably would have dyed my hair purple by now. Oh, God.
And gone woke.
I think I was definitely one of the lucky ones. So it gives me hope, because if I can wake up and become so impassioned and enraged with the way things are going that, you know, I jumped in my Jeep and I drove across the country last year. And I got to spend time in Ottawa because I wanted to be a part of the movement. And now I'm back. I went home for a bit. Now I'm in Alberta, which is still Western Canada. But, you know, I can't even imagine where I'd be right now. Probably would have drank myself to death by now, honestly, if I think about it, the direction I was going. I had no purpose. I would have just, you know, eaten the bugs and owned nothing and been happy. So.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives me hope.
There's going to be a 2.0 personally. There has to be a 2.0 when it comes to the convoy, you know. I'm pretty certain there's going to be a because the whole thing was thrown together so organically that it worked. And it worked because nobody had a real agenda. It wasn't until they got settled into the parliament area, both Canada and New Zealand. It wasn't until they got settled in there that the infiltration started and the misdirection was implemented, you know. But there's something to be said about doing something organically without a leader. But the problem is any kind of movement requires some leadership. They need to have a basic plan. So I don't know. What do you reckon, Vinny? How do you reckon that the Kiwis can get around this and actually pull off a 2.0?
Oh, don't ask me that. Oh.
or is that against your... What? Your bail condition.
No. It's just, as Jordan Peterson would say, there's a lot to unpack here. So first rung of the ladder, you got people who've only just woken up, all right? They haven't done 10,000 hours of study and watched 3 documentaries a day for 6 months in a row. Their perspective is somewhat, you know, short-sighted, perhaps, or maybe even just a little bit unenlightened, all right? They know that there's a lie going on, and they are very, very enthusiastic about doing something about it. And God bless them. But they're very naive about what it is they're trying to accomplish, because they don't know exactly what it is they're up against, okay? They don't know about psychopathy. They don't know about satanic ritual abuse. They don't know about the cult indoctrination of almost every sector of industrialized power in society, whether that be the military, the police, the lawyers, the doctors, the politicians, the media people, the entertainment people. They're all indoctrinated into this big kind of thing. And you're trying to go out there with your little messages and your flyers trying to undo generations of brainwashing that had made the brightest minds paid the most money to come up with the best plans of how to mess with your head, of how to derail you, of how to distract you, and also of how to destroy you. And you want to go up in politics, which has umpteen levels of different kinds of frickin' rules that you have to follow that you're not currently aware of, that could jump out at you at any point like some kind of giant grasshopper thing. Look, getting a political party requires 500 people to give you money and sign on a dotted line that they want to be part of your party. Doesn't sound like a lot, but when you have to verify individually each and every single one of those people and then give them in documented form to the right person who then has to send it to the right person, and you have to do it within a time frame and so on and so forth, umpteen different things that can go wrong. Even Billy TK himself, who had a bigger social media following than the Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern in the middle of lockdown central, couldn't do it. All right. And so you've got a lot of people now who are starting their own little parties, and a lot of people who've already got their own little parties that have been going for a very long time and gotten no more than 0.1% of the vote. And you need in the mixed member proportional parliament that we have, MMP, you have to get 5% of the party vote. And once you do that, you can get like 8 or 9 members of parliament in. You just have to get 5% of the vote. It seems very easy on paper, but to get through this kind of thing, imagine for a moment that you want to vote for freedom in this current election. During the last election, there was basically one vote that you could have, Billy TK and the New Zealand Advanced New Zealand Public Party. It was very simple for everybody. There were a couple of other freedom parties there that nobody really took much notice of and still aren't taking much notice of them today. Today, however, with a whole bunch of very freshly awakened people who, again, I'd like to stress this, might not know what they're dealing with, there are like 8 different freedom political parties all vying for that same 5% of the vote, who say bad things about each other, are involved in a crapload of infighting in their own organizations or just starting those organizations, right? In an election year. So freedom from voting? I mean governe and mente are Latin words. This is where we get the word government. They mean mind control, to control the mind. That's what government in Latin actually means. And it is, just like all the other things that I've explained earlier, a cult. The belief in government in and of itself is a cult indoctrinated belief. The belief that I can give somebody else rights that I don't have, all right? The government has the right to steal things off you, beat you, kill you, and take your money and stuff like that with coercion. You don't have that right. You can't go out and do that to anybody. So how did the government get that right? From you? From you voting for them? They don't have that right at all, because you don't have the right to give it to them. And so this entire mental construct that we've got, an abstraction of consciousness. You can't touch a forest, but you can touch a tree. So there really isn't any government. There are only government employees, people who are mind controlled and mind controllers to keep the flock at bay, to set out their little minions to divide and conquer anybody who might start to become a threat, to demonize anybody who they can't infiltrate so that the vast majority of the public turn against them. They've got the system locked down. So, the question is, what is the point of politicking in the first place? It's much like the point of protesting. I've been to about 800 protests during my time and made videos about all of them. I can assure you that not one of those protests was successful in its stated goal. Okay? Now, so that means protesting is out, politicking is out. This alternative media thing that I've been doing for 15 years, we just get censored and stuff like that. So that's out. So what remains is what Stefan Versteppen, the author of Urban Guerrilla Warfare, talked about. Now, that doesn't mean about fighting and combat. It means when you're in a system that is at war with your freedom, you need to be cunning and ruthless. The whole idea here is that we can't affect the outcomes by participating in the system, but we can affect the system by participating amongst ourselves. Do we know somebody who's a doctor who doesn't have a medical license? Did you know that doctors without medical licenses can practice medicine if they're in a private members group? Okay? Did you know that all of these government regulations upon everything don't exist if you're in a private members group where people are just doing it of their own free will together and doing it under the radar? Imagine if you didn't need to rely on the government or the corporations for your food, your power, your water, your medicine, and so on and so forth. These things can and have been done successfully in many places around the world. And it only starts with one thing. You realizing that you are big enough and bad enough to change who you are to survive.
Well said. Hear, hear. Very well said. That's the importance of networking.
Yeah, well, this is what we were talking about. This is what we always talk about, you know, when it comes up to people, you know, you're complaining about JFK and complaining about the Sound of Freedom, saying that it's a controlled opposition, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, these are poor people who are fighting an endless wallet at the end of the day, and they're very sophisticated. And so so every time someone gets traction, they get trolled over to the enemy side, and this is what's happening. You know, every time they get close to it, they get the divisionists come in, and they troll everybody over. So they don't. So in that sense, these people are naive to realize that they're up against a very historical, old, traditional power that has its hooks in everything. It doesn't own the entire planet, but it owns a fair shake of it. And all of these groups, these families, these bloodlines, they are fighting with each other all the time. And not all of them want to subjugate everybody in an old, you know, dark age type way of living. Some of them just want to control everybody, but also have some fun with it as well and let other people just be creative and make money and so the white side of it. And then you got the dark side of it, who are just completely satanic, right? I think, you know, Vinny and I, we probably know, we've both talked to Benjamin Fulford a lot. You've talked to him a lot more than I have, but I still talk to him every now and then. I haven't interviewed him for a long time since that first time in 2013. Would like to in the future, but I want a bigger audience before I go to that level of interview, you know. So, but it does exist. People don't realize that they're not going to be able to really overthrow the system, even with just protesting and through the political system. But at the same time, if the enemy can infiltrate, people can infiltrate if they get themselves organized. They don't have to win an election, but they can get into every other position around it and slowly march towards it. But they have to infiltrate as well. They have to work like a secret society in a way, in a sense. You have to have a secret society of freedom people.
Like the French Resistance.
Something that is not detected. Something like that, underground system. You know, publishing your every move on Facebook is not very secretive.
And that's what...
It's a secret, guys, but don't tell anybody. But guess what's happening now?
Yeah, that's what Stefan Versteppen told me, is that by doing what I'm doing, I'm painting a target on my back. By getting arrested, what I'm doing is I'm destroying my ability to do other things while I'm dealing with this and stuff like that. He says, don't get yourself arrested, Vinny, and don't put a target on your back. Play the grey man. All right. The grey man is the man who can say the truth, but he doesn't say it in those words. And so the people who know what's going on will know what he's talking about. And the AI bots and things of that nature that haven't been programmed yet how to deal with metaphor, because they haven't just figured that out yet. don't know to censor them.
Yeah, that's right. And yeah, under the target, don't miss the obvious. Speak in metaphors. If you do communicate, communicate on your own platform, like what we've just done with FreeCon. We've just built our own platform, our own website. Still got to work on the security side of it, but we've built one. It acts pretty much similar. It's a WordPress thing. It acts very much like Facebook, but it gives people an alternative. And I run the admin, so, you know, of course, people might be able to hack into it if they want to. No, but don't do it in public. If you're planning something, okay, when you're at the initial stages of planning something, if it's big, do it off all the public media or the public mainstream media, and then just do the final promotion of it at the end, because that gives a time limit for them to get organized. The infiltrators, they have to get organized, and they have to figure out what's going on. But the way it's being done now, it's all being planned on Facebook and all that kind of stuff, and it just immediately gets shut down, filled with infiltrators immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And then they start trolling each other. They start trolling out people to the other side, and then the infighting starts. Nobody knows what the heck is going on.
Mm.
And then it just falls over, and that's it. Yeah. So do it on your own platform. By the way, we're well past our hour mark now. How can people get a hold of you? What's your website address? VinnyEastwood.com, is it?
Yes, it is. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. And over at VinnyEastwoodShow.com, you will also find Vinny and the Vendettas, my music with my band over there. And hopefully you guys will support us on Patreon or donate through PayPal and KiwiBank there. Now, at the moment, we've also got a little documentary about the day we were arrested called The Day Democracy Died. So on the homepage of VinnyEastwood.com, you can just click on that Day Democracy Died blue banner there and go and watch the little documentary and give you up to speed with what's been happened to me and Billy TK on that day and a little bit subsequent. Now, also on change.org, if you search Billy TK or Vinnie Eastwood, I believe there is a petition for justice for Billy TK and Vinnie Eastwood, where you can sign the petition to have us released, or at least have a very much reduced sentence. And Billy's documentary, The River of Lies, if you'll permit me to stand up for a moment here. The River of Lies, the New Zealand Scamdemic at riveroflies.co.nz. That is the website for Billy's documentary that he's making. Out of the first 90-minute episode, they're currently up to editing an hour and 15 minutes of it. So it's going to be coming soon. And Billy is going to be coming here in studio to record the voiceover work. And I must insist on rewriting a lot of the audio and stuff like that, because, as you can tell, words are kind of my bitch.
Yeah. And they're very important when it comes to something like this. And you do have a very, because you've been doing this for such a long time, 20 years. So you are well-versed in how to approach subjects and have discussions with people.
Well, I remember.
Really awesome to talk to you. Our very first interview, even though I've known you since 2008, roughly kind of. Kind of knew of you.
Yeah.
Since 2008. Yeah, so way back then. So it's really interesting to catch up with you, well, over 10 years later.
Yeah. I remember that I was at a festival and this guy was telling me, "Oh, Vinny Eastwood, you're nothing, bro." And I'm just like, but you have heard of me, haven't you? Yeah. Just like, "You're not funny, Vinny, we're just laughing at you." But you are laughing, aren't you? So that's the thing about it. I believe Dr. Bill Deagle, when he interviewed me on Genesis Communication Network a number of years ago, he said that the most intelligent people in the world, the two professions, are theoretical physicists and comedians. And I believe it's for the same reason, because they take large, complex, seemingly unrelated sets of data and they compress it to a formula that's so simple that it makes you laugh.
And it's memorable.
Well, one can only hope. There's only two ways to achieve immortality: procreation and narrative. your stories. Your stories are what get passed down through the generations. So maybe in 100 years or so, there will be stories that are passed down about Rosie and Jason and Vinny doing this one show one time that fomented a forest fire in the minds and hearts of men and women the world over, and that they rose up as one and eventually became free through their sacrifice and their diligence.
I hear angels singing.
Might be my singing voice. Now, we thank you so much for the airtime today, guys. And I was just kind of like, I was coming on here to be part with Billy and other people from around the world, but it's just been you guys and me, and it's been freaking fabulous. Thank you so much.
It's been great, Vinny. I hope you come back sometime soon when you're not horribly, terribly busy. And if you talk to Billy, tell him happy birthday from Rosie Convoy in Canada. You make sure you give him a nice little pinch on the arm or something so that he'll know. It's all out of love. I was looking forward to seeing him again. He's been a guest a couple times now, but I know he's been busy. The last time he was on, he was talking about the documentary he was working on. So I mean, completely understand. He's a busy guy.
In the grind, whereas I'm not quite as busy as Billy. I've just got a baby as well. So every time that I'm on radio, there's a little baby that's been taken care of by his poor mummy, who is just so tired, you know. So it's been great to be able to do shows and things like that and get more coverage for this issue and get to know my peers around the world, because at this time, that is the most important thing that we can do, is get attention on this case about what's happening in New Zealand to peacefully protesting activists. Because if it is happening here and people allow it to happen and don't support us and that kind of thing, and likewise as people have been in jail in Canada for a very long time, if people aren't making noise about it, it's going to be taken as consent. And then they'll start doing it to any one of us.
Let's all be that squeaky wheel, shall we?
Yeah. Squeaky wheel gets the oil.
Mm-hmm. And I have a quick question, completely off topic. What color is that cup that you keep drinking out of?
It is
green. Every time you hold it up, it shows your background.
It is green screen green. And I do that so that when I drink it, you, although you can't see my face, you can still see my face.
Yes. Okay. Well, see, that's what I figured. It must be green, because the first time you did that, I think I went like
the invisible cup. What's in the cup?
Well, there's a nice comment here from Scott Free Freedom. Congrats, Vinny. Stay strong and always speak the truth.
Yeah, except when you're getting pulled over by the cop. No, sir, I do not have any cannabis. Yeah. I think I just confessed to something over the game. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Jason.
They got me going.
See, as soon as cannabis gets mentioned, Jason's on it. You know, now we know why he lives in the Golden Triangle, bro.
Yeah, I hear William Mount talking about me all the time.
Our regular Willie Nelson.
You were speaking in metaphors, Vinny, remember?
Oh, yes, absolutely. The endocannabinoid system is what I'm talking about here, ladies and gentlemen. The cannabinoids from within. You breathe in. All right.
You hold it for a bit, and then you, anyway.
Yeah, it's on hold to a cannabis dispensary in California once, and they said, "We're experiencing a lot of high callers right now, and you know, like when the callers are high, they're just like, you know, like, it's like, you know."
My father was in, well, we were in Mexico back when I was a kid, we went into a leather jacket shop, right? And so we went into the leather jacket shop, and my father said, well, how much for the jacket? And the guy said, $250. And I said, no, I don't want to buy the shop. How much is the jacket?
Oh, man.
Oh, no, all right, ladies and gentlemen, we have to wrap it up. We've really gone way over. And I am heading into the city of all places to go to today. So I'm going to get on the move. So thanks, Manny. Vinny, I will drop all the links into the chat area once we've finished this live, so it doesn't go on the live stream repeat. We'll put it into the general chat area. Yeah, it was awesome to finally actually speak with you after all these years of following you. And Rosie got a treat as well because she hadn't heard of you until today.
Yeah.
So now hopefully you'll pick up some more steam in Canada.
Some more semen in Canada. Yes. Scott Free Freedom has just said it's always great to have a good laugh, and you know, it just reminds me. I bought a stepladder the other day, and I never knew my real ladder.
Classic.
Thanks, guys. Classic. So much.
I love dad jokes.
I've got a million of them.
It's very important. I think comedy definitely has a place to kind of get us through the dumb things.
Yep.
It's so good to laugh. It does. And it works your abs too, which makes you stronger.
Yeah, it makes you healthier, works your heart, and releases those feel-good hormones and things of that nature. It helps to alleviate trauma and depression. And this is why when people are like surgeons or soldiers, they have a real wicked sense of humour because they see such horrible things. I remember interviewing a comedian, Wyeth Chalmers, once, and I asked him, why do you make jokes? He goes, I don't know, there's a guy standing on the street, and he's got sort of like his hat on a weird way, and I'll make a joke out of it. And through some way or another, we realise that the reason we make jokes is because we don't like the things that we see. And so we have to imagine something funny about them so that we can deal with everyday life.
It's very true. Truer words have almost never been spoken.
Mm. Thank you so much.
I hope you come back to me. I'd love to have you back on the show. I do want you opposite of Chris Dacey. Chris Dacey from Canada, he's got a Dacey Media. He just left on a tour of Canada. He's heading Eastern Canada. He's from, usually hangs out in Ottawa. Mm. But he's doing like a cross-country community tour, trying to get exactly what you were talking about, getting the groups together, getting people to organize, kind of figure out their food supplies, and kind of just gardening, self-sustainability. And so he's heading east, and then he's heading west. And he wasn't sure if he'd have any internet connection where he was tonight. And it was midnight where he was when we started the show. It's 11:30 here now. Wow. But he's 2 hours ahead because he's in central Canada, or like eastern Canada.
Mm.
I hope you come back, Vinny. I would love for you two to get together and kind of just chat.
That'd be great.
Because he's got a lot of stories. He's that guy that you always see who's heckling and following Trudeau with a camera. And he's quite fearless in his own way. And as far as I know, never been arrested. But he's threatened a few times. But he knows his rights, and he's always live. And it'd be cool. He's got a great sense of humor, too. I think that you guys would click. And it'd be cool to hear the banter between two social media giants.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that people don't really know is the entire point of talk radio. Two things, really. One is the banter. Number two is the thing you're supposed to avoid, dead air.
Yep, and that'll definitely kill the number of viewers. But so we're at an hour and 30 minutes. I'm just going to do the usual. If you haven't liked the video, please like the video. If you haven't subscribed, please subscribe. And if you subscribe, now ring that little notification bell so that you get the notification when I'm going to be going live or when Jason and I are going to be doing another show. We try to do one every week. Last week, we kind of, our guests, Vinny, you guys didn't get the messages in time. And so we rescheduled. But I'm so glad you made it this time. I'm so glad. And I'm sorry that Billy didn't, but it is what it is. Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Vinny Eastwood from New Zealand.
Yeah. Well, that, as I say, there's only one thing you can guarantee about reality. It is what it is, and it isn't what it isn't.
That's for darn sure. Yes, hit the like button. And to anybody who's been, who'll be watching it later on, thank you for tuning in and watching this. Especially if you're watching it later on. If you can start liking it and sharing it, it'll help the algorithm, because honestly, the censorship bills, Bill C-11 and Bill C-18 here in Canada, are making it virtually impossible for people like me with little channels like this to get any kind of viewage, because as soon as it's posted, it just gets swallowed up in the sinkhole of algorithmy. So anything to help. Get these voices out, all of us who are just these little guys who are just speaking the truth and speaking truth to power. And yeah, we are a good community. We keep growing, and I know they hate it. So let's stick it to them and share the video and get more people to subscribe if we can. Really much appreciated. And thank you so much, Jason. Jason Benbridge from State of the Nation, living in Vietnam, which apparently is quite the paradise compared to our Commonwealth countries. Lucky. But
Can I just interrupt you there, because this will be my last transition over to you, and then we've got to end the stream. But don't forget, we do We Are Ready live stream heroes broadcast. We try to do them at least once a week, so we try to squeeze in two broadcasts a week. Now, unfortunately, we don't always, but we try and get it done. And we have launched our own platform, our own website, called freecom.co. So it's free as an freecoms.co, freecoms.co. And I'll put all the links down there, as usual, in the chat box. And, from me, thank you very much to our guest, Vinny Eastwood, today. Really, really happy to meet him finally after so many years, although we've chatted here and there online. And Rosie, yeah, great job. Headphones, would do amazing.
Oh, yes. It's always a pleasure, especially when we don't have all sorts of technical difficulties. But on that note...
True, Dan did her thing today.
Oh, thank you for that. Let's see if I can say this. Miigwech. I hope I said that right. Probably not. I tend to butcher other languages. But thank you so much, Scott Free Freedom. And thank you, Hard Plates, for the smile and the peace sign. Thank you so much for everybody who's watched. And we'll watch it in the next little while. So on that note, Jason, do you want to cue up the outro?
Yep, I'm on it. See you later, alligator. We are over.
All right. Thanks again, Vinny. All the best to you.
See you. Bye-bye, everybody.
All right.
Bye. See you later.
Whoop.
Oh.
That didn't work.
Or did I press that?
Oh, we're back. We're back. Okay, it's now hour number two of the...